Thank you so much for pressing play on another episode of A-Sides. And for this episode, I spoke with Jonathan Stoy, who performs with Framing Hanley, the infamous Her, and he even has his own solo material, which I think is pretty cool. Now, one thing that I love about doing this podcast is that I've happened to make so many friends and connections while doing it. Like, Denny put me in contact with Rizzo, and then Rizzo in turn put me in contact with Freddie Herrera, and now Jonathan Stoy as well. It was cool talking to him about his music, some of his favorite music, and we also had some unexpected common ground as well. So thanks to Jonathan. Thanks to you for listening. Hope you enjoy this conversation with Jonathan Stoy on A-Sides.
Look, it's rock and roll!
And cue music.
Just goes to show there is no limit to how far down you can go.
Go back with Rizzo a ways, right?
Quite a ways, yeah. Like,
yeah.
I met Rizzo in 2009, I think, okay. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, I know it was like the early like 2010s around there.
Yeah, I moved to Nashville in 2009 to join Adeline, and well, that was like March of 2009. So I think we played our first show was Adeline in like October. So yeah, it was probably sometime that summer that I met good old Rizzo.
Oh, cool. I just saw him over the weekend because Affairs came up to Illinois and played a couple shows. So,
oh, that's awesome.
You're familiar with those guys, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was supposed to play with them. It was like a couple years ago when they were doing a show in Franklin, Tennessee. And it was like the day I was releasing my record. I was so stoked to play with them. And then I got COVID like the day before and had to miss it. But no, I've known all those guys for most of the guys for a while. So yeah.
Was that the record, The Wooden Bed?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was 2021, I think. A couple years ago now, yeah.
Oh man. But you just put out a couple singles this year, right? Pathetic and Lovesick?
Yep. Yep. I've got those two out this year. I'm sitting on like my second record. I finished that. I got it mastered and it was completely done last year. So I started kind of trickling songs off that record, starting releasing stuff towards the end of last year, and I'll put the whole darn thing out one of these days, but it's a lot of work getting a record out and all that all by yourself. So
yeah, well, that's what I was curious about, because I told you that I was digging on The Wooden Bed, that EP, I guess you want to call it, or is it
it's like halfway in between, LP. Right, it's like,
yeah,
it's like eight songs, but one of the songs is like a minute 20, so yeah, it's short, it's like a 20 minute album or EP, whichever.
Well, it's kind of like a, I guess, no filler, I guess, you know? I mean, you just have some good songs on there. But like you said, like you did that all by yourself?
So that one I recorded that with my buddy Caleb, Mr. Caleb KBC Sherman, who plays guitar in a band I'm in called The Infamous Her. And he's got a studio at his house that is vibes for days, and it's a really cool place, and I was comfortable kind of going over there and doing stuff with her. So when I decided to kind of execute some solo stuff, it naturally just kind of worked out where I was over there making some music. So we tracked it all over there and he mixed it, and yeah, it was a fun experience.
A wooden bed has a pink eye pillow.
Like, where did you come up with, like some of those like lyrics, because it's really like tongue in cheek.
Yeah, it's honestly okay. So it's all kind of it is very tongue in cheek. I wrote it about like an experience with an ex girlfriend, a nasty breakup. I'll say that. So a lot of the like the song itself, "Our Wooden Bed," is a lot of just like inside jokes, like very little literal inside jokes that we had. But yeah, I wrote that whole kind of album right after we split, so it was kind of a way for me to cope. That's why it's a little bit sad at times, but hey, that's all right. I like sad music. So I can't help it.
I feel like that song could almost be like, I was thinking some of it could have been like maybe not to be like morbid, but it could be in like a horror movie or something, you know, like the taking what the trying to make her or whatever out of like hair and stuff, or like the pink eye pillow.
Yeah, that's funny. Like that, all of that was like quite like literal stuff out of that relationship. Like she did the fake eyelashes thing, and her hair was everywhere. It's a fake person that we made one day in bed. So I was like, it was very, very, very literal. And yeah, the pink eye pillow thing that got a. I got some flack from that from a lot of friends and people that listen to the record. The same thing, didn't really understand what it meant. And really, I had some people think it was a lot dirtier meaning than it was, having a pink eye pillow. But it was just really just an inside joke about a pillow that you tuck in between your legs when you sleep at night and you kind of fart all over it.
Oh.
you don't want to use the wrong pillow, or else you get pink eye.
Oh man, that's not even what I was thinking that meant either. I was like what?
I'm telling you, the whole song, it's a weird song. I remember writing that when I was like, nobody's gonna understand this song, but I thought it was funny.
I haven't thought about this in so long, but it reminds me of a girlfriend that I had, like, oh man, when I was like a teenager. But she wore so much makeup that when she did lay on the pillow and got up, it had like an impression of like the makeup was still
right. You see, like, there's the eye, there's the lipstick, there's the mouth, and all that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
These old white sheets that used to smell like you, but now they reek. Cause I can't find the heart to wash them. So I'll make a pretend girlfriend out of eyelashes and hair left in our wooden bed.
But yeah, we did that record. I did that whole record with Caleb, and then the one I'll be releasing this year. I started like doing demos for that album, and I was going to go to Caleb again to his place to do it. I had a studio in Nashville when I was living there at a rehearsal studio called Diamond Sound. I had a room there, and I just had all my gear set up. So I have a recording set up, and he's like, dude, why don't you just do it on your own? You know, I've made demos on my own, but I haven't made. Yeah. An album. So I kind of undertook that, and this new one I'm releasing, like the song Pathetic, Lovesick. I did majority of that on my own at my studio in Nashville, and my home in Nashville as well. We did like drums and the organ at Caleb's place, and he mixed the whole thing. But that was a wild experience, kind of tracking a record by myself at first. You know, it's like it was very slow, very, very slow at first, but I kind of got the hang of it.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that was fun.
You were saying you're home in Nashville, but are you based in Michigan, or is that where you're actually relocating to? Or
yeah, so I'm in Michigan right now. We live in Grand Rapids. I was in Nashville from 2009 until the end of 2022, when we decided to come a little bit further north, be a little bit closer to family. The cost of living's a lot better up here, and also there's a lot of work for me when I'm not like kind of touring. With my bands, there's a lot of like cover gigs up here that I'll go out and play some solo stuff, and that's kind of like the day job. So yeah, we decided to come up here, and it's funny, we've been in Grand Rapids for like a year and a half, and next week I'm actually moving like even further north. We got a place like in the middle of the woods right outside of Traverse City, so I'm excited to be a little hermit for a while.
Oh, cool. So you grew up in Michigan too?
Yeah. I grew up in Michigan. Kind of like in the Metro Detroit area until middle school. And then I did middle school and high school in Traverse City. Yeah, that's where I grew up. And then a buddy of mine from a band up here moved to Nashville and started Adeline with a few guys he ran into there. And when they needed a bass player, I was just available. Thought I'd give it a shot.
Oh, cool. So, you kind of like circled back around.
Yeah. Yeah. Always kind of swore off like the whole like moving back home thing. But then I started getting old and I don't go out and do things like I used to anymore. I like being in the middle of nowhere where I can do a lot of fishing and live a quiet, simple life.
I guess, yeah, time with family is good too. Like I usually try to see my family whenever I can. Usually Sundays, like I carve out time to do that too.
Yeah, and that's kind of the plan. I know my parents are so excited to have us kind of back around the hometown, back around Traverse City. Every Sunday, my mom does like family dinner. She'll cook a big dinner, and I'm glad I get to be a part of that moving forward. Because I was gone for like 15 years. You know, I wasn't home that much in that 15 years. I mean, I'd come home for holidays and whatnot, but you know, it's a lot of time of missing out on those meals. And you know, nieces and nephews growing older, and now they're almost like middle school and like turning to teenagers. It's like, cool, I want to spend some more time around all them. So glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, I was curious, when did music enter into your life? From an early age?
Pretty early. So my uncle is a musician. His name is S.G. Wood. He's still out there playing to this day. He's still grinding, doing the thing. A huge inspiration of why I kind of started playing music. And he gave me my first guitar, I think it was like fifth grade, so around 1995. And I started like a little three-piece band, you know, shortly thereafter. And I've kind of done music to some degree in my life since then. But I'd say it was kind of right around the time I moved to Nashville. It was kind of like, all right, I'm going for it as a career. I'm actually going to try to make money doing this. So, but yeah, I've had my hands on a guitar most of my life.
What were the first like records that you remember getting? Like whether it was like a CDs or cassettes or.
Oh, dude. My first two cassettes, I remember it all like it was yesterday. So I was in like probably first or second grade when I got my first cassettes. It was Queen's Greatest Hits, Michael Jackson, Dangerous.
Oh,
and
awesome.
I listened to those a lot as a kid. And then I like went through an Elvis phase, so I had a few of his records. But when CDs came out, I was like right about to go into middle school. And my siblings and I went to like a private Christian school outside of the Detroit area. So I was very much introduced to like the Christian rock. So my first CD was like DC Talk. I don't know if you know any of the like the Christian
dude
world.
I went to a Christian grade school where I'm at in Peoria, Illinois. Yeah, from like first through eighth grade. So yeah, I knew DC Talk and who's the other guy? Michael W. Smith.
Oh yeah, I remember the Newsboys.
Yeah.
All those guys. Yeah, that was elementary school and the middle school. And then I discovered like alternative and pop punk, and it was all kind of downhill from there once I discovered secular music.
Yeah.
Kind of changed my life.
Oh,
for better or worse, I don't know.
Yeah. But I'm showing you that door where I gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Get the fuck up. Well, that's crazy. You went to like a Christian school too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Up until about eighth grade. And then I remember that's when my family moved from the Detroit area up north, Traverse City. And I remember like going to public school for the first time and just being like, oh, my God, this is so much different. Like,
yeah.
And it was. It really was.
For me, it was like culture shock kind of. I went from like the private school to the public school. And it was like, I don't know. I had never heard of a lot of those heavy rock bands and kids like at the time. It was 98, so they were into, like, Marilyn Manson, and there was, like, all that. So I didn't know about goth kids, I guess, either, so, you know.
Same.
It's like a whole world of stuff.
That's funny. Yeah, we went through a very similar experience. It was right around, like, 99, 98, 99, 2000, when I was entering public school, and that's right around, like, you know, the Limp Bizkit and the Ba with the Ba, Kid Rock days, and Korn and all that stuff. And I was just like, oh, my God, what is this?
Yeah.
And like I remember getting like the Limp Bizkit $2 bill CD, and I was still like going to this private Christian school, and we were on our eighth grade trip going to like Washington D.C. and we went to an FYE, and I bought this Limp Bizkit CD, and I remember just being on like the bus and listening to this. To me, it was insane music. I'd never heard anything like this, and just thinking like of all these kids, what I was listening to, like you know what I'm saying? Like, I felt like the odd man out, but. It was so like it was insane hearing that kind of music after growing up on stuff like DC Talk and all that, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
Jarring. In the best way.
So, yeah, all right, we're, like, right on the same age.
The good old days, man.
Well, that's kind of funny then, because, yeah, like, Rizzo and all those other Great Affairs guys, they're, like, 50-ish, kind of.
They're a little older, yeah. And I remember, like, yeah, when I moved to Nashville, I was still early 20s. So Rizzo was, you know, probably mid-30s, and so were half the guys in the band, I think, you know, our singer Brett and our drummer Johannes, and we had another drummer Jeremy. They're all older than us, and I remember, like, getting to Nashville and, like, these old farts, like, these guys. Now I'm older than they were, but that's life, you know?
Oh, yeah, I'm not trying to bash their age or anything, because they turned me on to, like,
no
other music that I never would have heard of either, so.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. I learned so much from being in a band with Rizzo and all those guys. It was, like, literally, like, cutting my teeth, you know, those first few years in the Nashville music scene. Yeah. All those guys. And I've known Matt from the Great Affairs for a while. He actually played bass for me. I did, like, a solo show at one point. Oh, I did cool. A couple, like, full band shows. And yeah, Matt played bass. Crazy. Small town, Nashville.
Yeah, because that's what Rizzo, he said that you were playing, like, you played bass, and then now you're, like, singing and playing guitar. He was, like, kind of almost, like, almost sounded like he was proud of you.
No. So. Well, yeah. I you know, bass was kind of, like, the primary thing for me for a while. I started on guitar, and when I started, like, my first band, we had a drummer and we had another guitar player, so it was like the natural course of action. Like, I volunteered to play bass, and then for like years I just was playing bass for bands. And when Adeline came to an end, it was like right before I joined Framing Hanley and right after Adeline broke up, I didn't have a whole lot going on. So that's kind of when I started picking the guitar back up and trying to write some of my own songs.
Yeah.
And ever since then, it's been kind of a bit bigger part of my life, especially in the last few years when I started playing guitar for Framing Hanley. Because I played bass for them for a while, and then it was a few years ago I hopped over and started playing guitar. So I'll play whatever you put in front of me, or at least try to.
Did you ever want to be a singer?
I think I always wanted to, but there's always better singers than me, right? Like I didn't really grow up like with any experience singing.
Yeah,
I never was like in choir or anything like that. So I think I was pretty self-conscious about like trying it. Honestly, I wasn't really comfortable singing until like years of touring with Framing Hanley. Cause I did a lot of the vocals in that band, singing a lot of the harmonies and whatnot. Just getting that experience, getting out there and doing it really kind of pushed me to do it on my own a little bit. So.
Yeah. I guess that's what cutting your teeth. Yeah. With the other projects and stuff. Yeah. You kind of found your gained confidence.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Because any band before Framing Hanley, like the band Adeline, I sang a little bit, but our guitar player Josh, he was doing most of the background vocals. He was writing a lot of the songs, and it just kind of made sense naturally. Yep. Getting that experience definitely was a little boost to confidence. It's crazy now. It's like, you know, I'm making my living, you know, playing most weekends by myself, which, you know, 10 years ago that would have scared the shit out of me. Like. I've been shaking in my boots when I did that stuff from time to time. So
I don't know if this is a fair comparison or not, but I kind of felt your voice sounded a little like Jack Blades, like from like Night Ranger. Like, has anybody said that or
never? When you said Jack Blades, I was like, oh, I don't know who that is. So thanks for the Night Ranger. mention there. No, I never got that, but I'll take it. That guy, you know, he's in a band like Night Ranger, so must be good. So
yeah, that. And he did like Damn Yankees too with like Ted Nugent.
Oh, was that Ted Nugent?
Yeah.
The Damn Yankees. I'm gonna have to give them a listen now and see if I can hear the comparison there.
I don't want you to feel self conscious or anything though. Like I don't know. Like I was just like, man, this guy's voice kind of sounds like a.
At least you didn't say like Tom Waits or something like that. Like somebody, you know, or a Bob Dylan, something like that.
No. Or actually with some of your songs too, like how they were like tongue in cheek. And then I even saw your nickname. What was it? Sad Boy Stoy.
Hell yeah. Yep. That was a nickname. I told you, I love sad songs. I really genuinely love, like I grew up you know, like I said, I'm the pop punk, which turned into like emo and hardcore, and it got me into like, you know, singer songwriters. I just developed a love for sad songs, but like I'm genuinely a happy person. I'm not really that sad most of the time.
I kind of got like a Jimmy Eat World kind of meets like Taylor Swift kind of vibe from it, you know, because they kind of
that's a huge compliment. I'll take that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, Jimmy Eat World has like they've got the. I don't know if you could say emo, but I mean, they've got the kind of like, I don't know, kind of like the breakup songs, but then they've got the kind of like longing for like relationships and stuff. So,
yeah, totally. No, I love Jimmy Eat World. They're a big influence of mine for sure. Oh, and cool, like Taylor Swift, it's like, you know, you got to respect her songwriting. I can't say I'm a Swiftie myself, but Jesus, she's huge for a reason. She's really, really awesome at what she does. Are you a Swiftie?
I guess I would say I'm a Swiftie. I saw the movie in the theater. I've never seen her concert, but I've bought some of her albums. So, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, man.
What's your favorite album?
I like Red.
That's like kind of like she still had her toes in the country pool at that point, didn't she? Like,
yeah, because it's kind of got a little bit of the country, but then there's some kind of rock songs, but then there's kind of like the, you could tell she's going to become a pop singer too.
Right. And yeah. I think it was probably like after that is when she did the whole Shake It Off thing and did the whole pop transition, I believe.
Yeah, she went all the way with 1989. But
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, good for her.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever seen Jimmy Eat World then? Or?
Yeah, I've seen him, I think, maybe just once. From what I remember, maybe twice. It was a long, long time ago. I saw him at like Michigan State, some random auditorium, like 2006 or 7 or something like that.
Oh wow!
It was cool. It was cool. The thing is, like, that band sounds great. They're not the most entertaining band, at least visually live, you know. But they sound fantastic.
I guess they sound like the album. So I
mean, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What are some of your other favorite artists or favorite songwriters?
I'm a huge, as far as like songwriters and artists that influence me, like in my solo stuff, like I'm a huge Butch Walker fan. I love Butch Walker. Awesome. I love all he does, like producer wise, and a lot of what he does is like a solo artist. That's kind of was a big inspiration for me to start kind of doing solo stuff like 2013. But yeah, Butch is a huge influence. Bands like Green Day, I love Billy Joe. I like simple songwriting. I like some stuff like Jason Isbell, and you know, I'm kind of all over the map. I'm a sucker for anybody that's a good songwriter, really.
Yeah, Butch Walker. Yeah, he doesn't really even stick to one genre. He kind of he kind of weaves in a lot in there.
Exactly, and that's honestly like that's how most of my favorite bands and artists are. Is like the ones that kind of evolve over time. They don't stick to the same sound. They don't make the same record over and over and over and over again. It's like, so like, I think I outgrew a lot of pop punk music as I started growing up. It's like a lot of it's the exact same, but you look at like bands like, you know, Blink and Green Day, and those are bands that helped shape that genre. So I think they're like the pioneers, and those are the bands I still listen to, but like I can't follow it anymore. There's too much. Maybe I'm too old. I don't know.
I guess, your taste kind of change or evolve or like refine and stuff. Because I don't go back to a lot of that stuff from high school that I dug, like Seven Dust. I was like super into them and like into Korn then. And I kind of go back if I'm feeling nostalgic, but it's not like present.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. I'll throw on a Limp Bizkit tune every once in a while, but after you get like one or two deep, it's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to put on something else.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. This is like off topic, I guess. Well, they're not really a topic, I guess. We're talking about music. A buddy and I, we're turning 40 this year. So at the start of the year, like we're going to come up with a playlist and have like one song from each year. And then it turned into like, where I'm going with this was it turned into like, we got so deep in high school years where I was going to keep it one song, and he's like, man, I'm having a hard time picking something from 98 and 99. So then I was like, why don't we like make offshoot playlists, and here's like the 98, 99, 2000, 2001, or something like that. So,
oh, that's cool.
Actually, I was only going to make one playlist and do like 20 songs from each of those years, but he's the one that's like, I couldn't limit myself to 20, so he's doing all these offshoot things, and he's getting so deep.
He's like making like, it's like, I love playlists because they're like the mixtape of today's day and age. So he's just like making some pretty good yearly mixtapes, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So what kind of stuff, like on 98's playlist, did you said your buddy curated that one, or did you throw some songs on there? Like, what do we listen to on these playlists?
DC boys, no one to let the beat. Drop. Now when I wrote graffiti, my name was Slop. If I rap shoot, my beats is stop. Step from the game, when I start to chop, I'm a lumber jack DJ era. If you try to knock me, you'll get mocked. I'll stir fry you in my wok. You need to start shaking and your fingers pop. Like a pinch on the neck of Mr. Spock.
I had Beastie Boys Intergalactic because like that, I remember this summer going into between eighth grade and freshman year, that song, like, I couldn't escape it. And then I guess I did have a Limp Bizkit song from 2000. I had the Take a Look Around from Mission Impossible.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but then I made like a class of 2002, and then that had some stuff from 98, 99, 2000.
Take me back to the glory days, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember 98. I had a buddy in 98 whose dad worked at Vans, and when the Warp Tour came through the Metro Detroit area, we got to go to Warp Tour in 1998. As long as like we helped out and worked at like the Vans tent for like an hour or something, like just stocking stuff. Yeah. Like, yeah, you could have like passes and do whatever. And that was like one of my first tastes of like seeing like punk in the flesh. And I was like, oh my God, this is insane. Oh, that was like that was a crazy year for Warped Tour. I think like Limp Bizkit was on it. I think like Eminem did some dates and like Blink was on it. Yeah.
Oh, good damn. A lot of crossover stuff then.
Yeah. They had a lot. It was so, so diverse that year. And I'll never forget one of the first times I met somebody in a band I was obsessed with was at that Warped Tour show. And I was obsessed with a band called MXPX. I don't know if you're familiar. But
I know the name. Yeah.
I was obsessed growing up. Like that was my shit. And I ran into the guitar player backstage, and I remember like, you know, an hour before we're just walking around the backstage area, me and my buddy. And I was like telling them what to do. If we get to meet somebody, you got to play it cool, man. You got to play it cool. And then we met the guitar player from MXPX, and I'm like, yo, oh my God, I covered this song. I had this like full fanboy moment. It was like the complete opposite of what I just told my friend not to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. 98. Memories, man.
Oh, man. Had you seen any concerts before then, or was that your first real big one?
I saw like, you know, a couple like Christian shows. I saw DC Talk. I saw Newsboys. I even like started going to like, there were a couple Christian ska bands that I was into in the Detroit area. So I'd go to a couple shows like that, but that was definitely like my first big like secular show for sure.
Oh, awesome, man. Like, well, with going back to this music that we've been talking about, do you still have a big CD collection, or do you collect records, or is everything just digital for you?
Mostly digital. I mean, I do have some vinyl, but I don't have a record player. So honestly, I got into like buying vinyl on tour. That was kind of something I did for a while, like on the road, just, you know, hit up a coffee place in a vinyl shop. So I did that for a bit. I don't have any CDs. I think my dad might have like my high school CD booklet and like deep in storage somewhere. I hate to say it, but I'm mostly a digital guy. I bought in. So convenient, you know?
It is. Yeah. Cause you can like work out and you got your phone there, or traveling or being on the road. Yeah, it's just more convenient too.
It's so convenient. Now I'll try to like, I like supporting bands how I can. It's like, if I don't have a physical way to listen to music, I can buy t-shirts and I can buy concert tickets, and I try to do that. And it's like, dude, my attention span is so short. Like, I'll find a new record and I'll play it hard for like a few days, and then I won't listen to it again for a long time, you know what I'm saying? So it's like,
yeah,
If I wanted to just check out a lot of records, I'd be already broke. I'd be real broke if I had to buy every album I wanted to see.
Yeah, like I'm looking at my stuff, and yeah, I basically am broke because I'm like like paying for Apple Music, you know, the subscription, but then I'm still buying stuff, and I'm like, I kind of do wonder like why I still buy stuff, but I don't know. I like having it, I guess.
So. Yeah, it's nice to have something physical in your hands, especially like if you're getting it from shows and the merch table. It's like I genuinely like when I go to a show, I'm going to get something at the merch table just so I can, you know, pay it forward. I know what it does or what it means to be that band on the road, just being like genuinely buy anything. And that's the best thing you could do for us. So, yeah, I'm a T-shirt junkie. I've got a lot of band shirts.
Oh, yeah. Tidal waves, they went right through me. Tears from eyes worn, cold and sad. Pick me up now, I need you so bad. Down, 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 down. So what's your favorite flavor of Starburst?
Starburst? I don't know. I guess I'll go with red. Strawberry? I'll go with strawberry.
Okay. I'm just glad. I'm just glad you didn't say yellow.
No, dude. I'm not. No.
Yeah.
I'm good on that. No.
You don't have, like we said, you're more the digital instead of physical media, but do you collect anything?
What do I collect? I mean, I have a little collection. Guitars. I have a couple guitars. I've got a sunglasses collection. Like I got really into Ray-Bans and I bought a lot of Ray-Bans. I wear only one pair of them now. And I've got a little collection of watches too. I like watches.
Oh, cool.
Again, I only wear like one or two, but I went through a period where I was getting some watches.
It's funny though. At work, some guy was even just talking about like something about video games go for a whole bunch of money. I was just talking to him real quickly in the hallway. And I said, yeah, everybody collects something. And he goes, I collect bills.
That's a good one. Yes, I have a lot of those.
Yeah.
a lot of bills, unfortunately.
Do you have any shows you're currently watching or what's a binge-worthy show?
What am I watching right now? I've just started, I forget what it's called. It's on Apple TV. It's like a documentary about the Patriots dynasty. And I'm a couple episodes into that. I'm a sucker for Netflix docuseries, and I just binge watched The Program yesterday, which was insane. I'm trying to think if I'll throw it out there. I don't care. I got no shame. So my fiance loves to watch what we dub trash TV, you know, just reality shows and just, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but she wanted to find one that we could watch together. So I found the show called Below Deck that I thought was pretty funny. So we binged that show. It's just like, it follows these employees working on these huge, like mega yachts, the drama that follows it. So yes, that's a guilty pleasure of mine right now.
Huh. Interesting. I've never heard of that one.
It's bad. It's not worth to watch. I'll just, you know, I'll throw that out there right now, but it's like a train wreck. It's so bad you can't help but stare right at it. So,
is it because of the people, like the rich people on the yachts or something?
It's just like, you know, the rich people can be awful, like just like you'd imagine. But it's like, you know, more so like the drama in between, like the seven people that are in their early 20s working in, like, you know, the Bahamas on this yacht. Like They'll take shit from all these rich people for a couple nights on their charters. And then when the rich people leave and they turn the boat over, they all go to the shore and they get hammered. And then all this drama ensues that kind of thing. You know, it's like, it's so, so stupid. I can't believe I brought that one up. But, I don't recommend it.
It's all right. I'll admit this. I watched one recently. It was The Golden Bachelor.
I watched that too.
Oh.
Gary, that guy Gary, he was a trip.
Yeah, I've never really watched any of those before, but like it was funny with the ladies fighting over him and stuff, and then the one lady was like, she purposely like tripped and fell down or something, but you thought she got hurt, but then she like winked at the camera or whatever after he consoled her.
Oh, these old women, just, you know, they got their eye on the prize. They're just looking for love.
Yeah. Like,
70 or 75 years old.
Yeah, man.
Did you watch the whole season?
Yeah. I watched the whole thing.
So I don't know if you remember this on the finale, but they were showing the bloopers, and then there was that one old lady who just like, she like dead serious in the camera, just like, she just like ripped it, dude. She just straight up like ripped it, and it was the best thing that whole season. I loved it.
Was that the lady that kind of like, I kept calling her Bruce Jenner? Because there was one lady that, I don't remember the fart thing, but that lady looked really serious. She was the one who was like scolded the lady that won or something like that.
I know who you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah. She said zip it.
Any other...
Yeah.
Yes, the zip it lady. That was awesome. That show was so great. Like, it was like, the drama on those shows, you normally see it's like, you know, like I said earlier, like early 20-something-year-olds. And then there's these like grandmas up there doing little petty drama. It was hilarious. It was genius.
Well, it's funny you watched that too.
You know what? That's hilarious. That's right around the time I mentioned like my fiance was wanting me to watch one of her shows up there. And I was like, yes, I guess that was like the one that was starting right then and there. I was like, well, watch this one. I just picked it up. Randomly, and I was like, oh, this is great. I really had fun with that.
Like you'd mentioned, like Netflix, like the docuseries. Did you?
Yeah.
I haven't watched too much of that stuff, but did you see this one on there? It was like pop music, and it's like an 8-episode thing. And I think I only watched like 3 or 4 of them, but one was like all about boy bands, and then there's one all about Swedish pop music. And then there was one about auto-tune. So I guess those were the 3 that I watched. But I think there's like 4 more.
I haven't seen that. I hadn't heard of it, but it sounds right up my alley. Like,
it was kind of cool, yeah. Because like, I didn't know that, like, I know there's some of these, like, I think a guy that who's like a producer now with Taylor Swift, I didn't know that he was producing stuff back in the 90s, like Swedish pop stuff for like...
Max Martin? Do you remember his name? I know he's like a Swedish producer that...
Yeah, like I can't remember the names, but it was like this really weird thing where it kind of weaved through and it's like they worked with like Ace of Base and then maybe the guy's protege or something works with like Taylor Swift, but like...
Dude, the more you talk about it, maybe I did see this. This has been out for a little while, hasn't it?
I don't know. I just watched it like a month ago, so...
Okay. No, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I think that's Max Martin and, like, was it Dr. I don't think Dr. Luke was a part of that. But no, there's
somebody
like,
named Shellback or something. That might have been the protege guy.
Yeah.
But you're right. Maybe it was Max Martin because did he do stuff with, like, Backstreet Boys?
He did Backstreet Boys. Like, that was his heyday. Kelly Clarkson, Since You Be Gone. Like, that's Max Martin. Or that's his, you know, what you're saying, like his, you know, producing group. I know it was him and another guy or two or something like that. Yeah, the protege and Max was like, you know, learning from all that. But now that you mention it, I think I saw at least that episode, which was fascinating, you know, to see how that whole side of pop music works. Like the songwriters of pop music, like, crazy.
Yeah, even the auto-tune one was kind of interesting. Like it started out kind of like, I don't know, talking about T-Pain or something, but like,
oh right,
but then like because people were hating on him or something, but he's actually got a good voice and stuff without even the auto-tune.
Yeah, he doesn't need it, right? Like he's got an insanely good voice, and I remember seeing that for the first time, like, what the fuck? Why is this guy using auto-tune? But he was like one of the first to do it, at least as far as like using it as an effect rather than like a tool to actually pitch your voice. Like, what if we just crank it all the way and it's like, you know, sounds like a robot. It's like innovative. On the ground, keep my head in the clouds, electrified by the sound. It comes from the down, and we take a lot of days off. So, know that we have always been down, down. If I ever did a thing you do, then just let me do it now.
I got a couple more questions for you. If you could only listen to one artist for the rest of your life, who would it be?
Band or artist? Like just one either, musical? Like
or one discography?
it may surprise you. I'm going to go with 311.
Oh, 311. Wow.
I grew up, like, once I hit high school, I loved 311. Like, follow them around on tour, like, would go watch them. And to this day, that's like my classic rock. Anytime I throw that on, yeah. I can listen to any album front to back, and I love it.
Oh, cool. So you followed them around?
I followed them around. It's like, I understand, like, now as an adult, like, how cheesy a lot of their stuff is. You know, it's like, you know, this, especially, like, the rapper dude. Got a very interesting high-pitched voice as he raps, but it's like, it's a guilty pleasure, I guess. But yeah, like high school, we would hours and hours and hours just to catch a show, stay in a shitty Motel 6 that was very questionable, and follow them to the next town and do it all over again.
Cool. I've never done that. I've wanted to do something like that, but like there's a buddy of mine, and he did that when he graduated high school, and he followed around Blue Oyster Cult. It's like the late 70s.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a fun experience. Like, I sure was a kid when I did it. I was like 17, 18 years old. It was like rock and roll, like training wheels, right? Like, that was the stuff. Yeah. I remember, like, watching those shows. It was like, I want to do that. How do I do that? Still haven't figured that out yet, but I'm trying.
It seems like you figured it out, man. I dig that, the wooden bed selection. Thanks. Of songs, and then the newer stuff.
Thanks, too, dude. I think you'll... Whenever I get the new one out, check that out. It's a little bit different from the wooden bed stuff. It's not as sad, but I think you'll dig it. So,
do you plan on releasing it physically, or is it just digital? Or
I'll probably, you know, I have like physical copies of wooden bed. I printed just like CDs and sleeves, just so when I do play out, I have it at the merch table. So I'm sure I'll do that. I would love to do like vinyl and all that, but that's expensive, man. That stuff's expensive. And I'd rather just have something that, you know, if I have little CDs, I can just give those away, and it, you know, it doesn't hurt my bottom line that much. So,
yeah, because I guess, like, I don't know how far, if they're backed up anymore, but like the pressing plants too were like so far out taking orders and stuff.
It's crazy. It was last November, I think. Yeah, right after, in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, the band I play bass in, the Infamous Her, we went over to Europe, and we have a new record, and we were going to start selling the record over there on that tour. And we were waiting on vinyls, had it all lined up to where they're going to be delivered, waiting for us over there. And yeah, it was so delayed that we never got them in time. Like, we did that whole tour without the one thing we were promoting.
I know
it was a really big bummer. And then like a month or so later, sometime at the beginning of this year, they came in. They turned out great. They look really cool. I'm really proud of the album, but man, yeah, there's definitely a demand for that stuff being made right now.
Yeah Even bands are putting out cassettes and stuff for like new albums too.
Yeah All that stuff. It's like the cassettes, I think, is like one of those niche little, like, it's almost like a gag kind of gift, you know. It's like, I don't know who still has cassette players, but if you need to walk away with something, that's kind of a cool token. You just slide it in your pocket, you know what I'm saying? Pretty small and easy.
Like, that's almost what I thought. Like, I wasn't sure if that was a purpose, but maybe it's because the vinyl was delayed, so maybe some bands are like, hey, we want to get something out, so let's put a cassette out
or something. Yeah, all these cassette printing, you know, factories are just sitting there just like begging for work. Yeah. You can get your cassettes tomorrow if you need it. But vinyl's like, sorry, you gotta wait like a year and a half.
Yeah, shit. Any albums you're looking forward to coming out this year? Because I know there's a bunch of stuff coming out.
Actually, there's one that I just started listening today. The Casey Musgraves record. I don't know if that was released. I think it was just released this past Friday. But I'm a big Casey Musgraves fan. So I've listened to about half of it, and it was really good. I'm stoked to kind of dive into that one a bit more. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. And then I even saw too, you got some like Framing Hanley shows coming up, like a week or two.
Yeah, we're doing like it's like five or six shows, something like that, two weekends back to back. But we're all really excited about it. We haven't played any shows in about a year and a half. It was like right when I moved to Grand Rapids. We haven't really played since then. So it's like we went out on tour with Hinder for a little bit, in like September of 2022. So it's been a little too long. We're excited. So excited.
Oh, cool. Do you have any other future plans for like the rest of the year other than putting out the new album?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of shows on the books. Obviously the Hanley tour is next, and then I'll be in Europe with the Infamous Her at the end of July, and then I think again sometime September, October. I haven't got those dates yet. Yeah, Hanley's also booking shows throughout the summer. We haven't announced it all, but there's a festival or two and some shows we'll be announcing in, I think, August. So, and in between then, I've got a lot of solo cover shows that I do in the meantime. So, okay. If you're in the Michigan area listening and want to see that, jonathanstoymusic.com. It's got it all laid out, where I'll be with who and when.
So, okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for doing this, man. It was cool to actually talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, dude. That was fun.
We'll have to do a follow-up at some point, too.
We will. I like what you did with the last episode with you did with Rizzo, you know, deep diving down. I think it was like 1994 or something like that, you guys
went down. Yeah, because I've talked to him like a whole bunch of times, because last year we did two on Dio.
You really?
Dio in the 80s, and then it was like we did like Dio in the 90s. He says Alice in Chains is his spirit animal, so I feel like we need to do that at some point, too.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I tell you what, man, since we kind of like we're right around the same age and we're in school and all that stuff at the same time, if you ever want to do deep dives in, like you said, like the 98s or like any of those years, you let me know. I can talk for days about that shit, though.
Hey, well, yeah, what about why I thought of 94 is because there's so many albums that came out. And then it kind of seemed appropriate going back like 30 years. What about 1999? If we hit.
Oh, that's my sweet spot right there, bro. Well,
25 years later, whatever, 99.
Count me in. We'll set that up for sure.
All right. Yeah. I'll follow up with you.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, thanks for having me, man. It was great chatting with you and look forward to doing it again sometime.
All right. Yeah, man. Hopefully I'll see you at a show too.
Yeah, man. If we're ever in the area, let me know. We'll have a couple beers or something.
All right, man. Thank you. Have a good night.
If she wanted the world to be a happier place, she'd stop at least one tear from rolling down my face. She'd think about me, maybe pick up the phone, say I'm missing you at the sound of the tone. If she wanted the world to keep spinning around, she'd pick a piece of my heart up off of the ground. I'd whisper her name in the still of the night, and while I'm dreaming of her holding me tight, she'd be changing her mind, packing her clothes, she'd buy a one-way ticket that would bring her and we would